24. We want you to tell us about the heroes who are changing this country through food. The people not celebrated enough, from forward-thinking farmers who are producing food that safeguards our future, to those people revolutionizing their communities and economies. We want to hear about the food and drink producers you value, including your favorite takeaway. What makes them special? To nominate, go to bbc.co.uk/foodawards, where you can also find our terms and privacy notice. Nominations close just before midnight on Sunday, the 30th of June.
Now on Radio 4, Rhys is back with research. And this week, he's tackling monogamy.
Many people have big life questions.
Why don't we all speak one language? Why is cheese so expensive? Tom Holland Height must remark.
But the only way to find the answers is by speaking to the experts or reading the information. No one has time for that. My name is Rhys James, and I'm not an expert, but my diary is empty. I'll ask the questions you don't think to. I'll get the answers you didn't know you wanted.
Everyone's capable, even the worms.
I'll do the research. As in, research. My name is Rhys. It works written down.
You're through to research. Please leave your name and question, and I'll have an answer for you within one calendar week. Beep.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, because, like, loads of my friends are getting married, but then I've got other mates in open relationships, and I just feel like I fancy loads of people, so are you meant to get married, or is monogamy, like, kind of outdated?
Love. Singers sing about it. Sculptors sculpt about it. Filmmakers like Richard Curtis even make films that cause mums to feel it. But what actually is love? And what should you do if you suffer from it? For most people, they puke all of their love onto one unsuspecting partner for the rest of their lives in a practice known as monogamy, and made legally binding by something called marriage, or a wife sentence. When once it was used to swap daughters for castles and settle the land disputes of kings, marriage soon developed into a commitment before God. But now, in a modern world, where we don't have land, we don't like God, and we're already committed by a financially necessary tenancy agreement, marriage exists solely so those over 35 don't have to use the word girlfriend. But should you get involved in this weird tradition, or just continue to watch from the sidelines in your dicky bow like a boxing referee? And if monogamous marriage is so sacred, why does my vicar claim he's married over 200 people? Some even claim monogamy itself is a thing of the past. To find out more, I spoke to John Aiken, former cricketer who has turned his back to relationship counselling, notably on reality TV show Marriage at First Sight, a show for those who want love but are too crap for dating, and for those who want fame but are too rough for Love Island. John, hi.
Hey.
Hi. Now, you're obviously obsessed with marriage, John. You make people get married the second they see each other. So why do you love marriage so much?
Well, I think it's a way of getting an exclusive relationship that's far more long-lasting than, say, a casual hookup to someone that you can essentially build your life with and then hopefully get that happily ever after.
And how have you shifted to weddings from being a professional cricketer? Do you just love all the wacky clothes?
Certainly I do love the colour white, I can't deny it, but...
Well, it's not just the wearing white. I mean, you hate LBWs, not just leg before wicket, but love before wedding, John.
Listen to that.
Why? What's happening? Is there an intruder?
No, not that I can see. It's very clever. I'm loving that.
Well, if you're loving it so much, why don't you marry it?
Look, there's not a huge link between cricket and getting married, but both of them at the end of the day can be a lot of fun. And that's what I want you to take away from
that,
Rhys.
That cricket and marriage are both fun. That's your message, is it?
Both can be a lot of fun, can challenge you, can take you out of your comfort zone, but at the end of the day, definitely worthwhile doing.
And both take bloody ages to get through, if you ask me. Now, despite John's best efforts, marriage rates are in decline among modern generations. The baby boomers love marriage so much they'd often do it thrice. But millennials get married around 29% less than boomers, while Gen Z get married 38% less than millennials. And marriage could end for good sooner than we think, as Gen Alpha, the newest generation, have a marriage rate of 0%. John, do you think the people who do get married just do it because it's normalised and people don't know another way to show someone that they love them so much and to tell them that they've sort of won?
No.
But there are other ways to commit, aren't there? Like, you know, a tattoo or maybe a death switch where the second your partner's heart stops beating, you die as well. Now, those are for life.
Yeah. Well, all of those things are very good suggestions. I like where your mind's at. But what I would say is that getting married is a big step up. And it is a public display of commitment to, you know, friends, family. It is a legal contract. So there's no doubt that there's a lot behind it. And a lot more thought needs to go into it than just...
marrying a stranger on the telly in Australia, for example.
Try not to bring out the sledgehammer, Reese. I like the fact that it's still important for some couples, and it gives that sense of security.
Is it more security, though, or does it just make it more difficult to leave? All it's really doing is slowing you down on your exit. It's basically a sort of net over the front door, isn't it? It's just more admin.
Yeah, there's no doubt there's more admin to it. There's a lot more red tape.
Yeah, or tape. Tape would work too.
You know, I think that's good because for those people that are really thinking about leaping into it, it's worth the red tape and admin, Maurice. It really is.
Well, if we're going to do admin anyway, why don't we just switch to 5-year appraisals? You know, at least a warranty period. You get 30 days with a fridge or a washing machine. Why not with a wife?
Well... You know, again, you're taking me places that I didn't expect, Reese, and I like it. What I would say is that when you go into a relationship and then you take it to the level of marriage, you've really gone past the idea of trial and error. Let's see if we need a service after 6 months, and if it's not quite up to it, we're moving on. No, when you take it to that next level where you're getting married, you're really saying, this is for life. I don't need a warranty. You've got me.
John is right. A marriage is a big commitment, but it's even bigger now than it was ever intended to be. According to anonymous sources, marriage was invented around 2000 BC, when the average human died around age 19 and was only 5'2", meaning it was little more than a teenage hobby, often between teenage hobbits. These days, we live for so long I can't even believe it, and as such, we're expected to keep one sexual partner for longer than we were ever supposed to be alive. So how can you alleviate your partner's fears you'll be unfaithful without simply dropping dead? These are my top tips for a healthy monogamous relationship. Number one, make it clear to your partner that you are completely devoted to monogamy. Leave your laptop open with recent Google searches that say things like how to not cheat. Number two, conflict resolution is key to any long-term relationship. Make sure to start plenty of fights so you can practice resolving them. Number three, say anything too much and the words become meaningless. Keep the magic alive by only saying I love you once a year. Number two, couples who like each other's friends stay together for longer. So stick photos of your partner's friends all over your wall and give them a friendship score out of 10. And number one, to truly avoid temptation from others and ensure your partner never has to worry about your infidelity, make yourself as ugly as possible. How'd you keep it fresh? How'd you keep it fresh? Because obviously, you know, people, supposedly they mate for life. Do you have to have sex in different locations or sort of schedule sex? I've heard people say you schedule sex, you know, surprising each other.
Let's be honest, that's not going to hurt, you know, sex in different environments.
Well, it could hurt depending on the environment.
That's right. But keeping it fresh is important, but not just in the bedroom, Reese. Good sex begins outside of the bedroom.
On the landing? What if my lodger catches me?
Think about the bigger picture, if you can. When you start being affectionate, it doesn't mean it's got to lead to sex. So non-sexual touch is also quite good in terms of just creating some intimacy.
So non-sexual touch, you mean like ruffle the hair, little punch on the arm, maybe a got your nose for old time's sake. Get him in a headlock. Show him you care.
You got to make sure that you're filling up the cup, Reese. You can't just do, say, flowers once a month. It's little things daily and often.
Flowers once a day, perhaps. Would that work?
I want you thinking bigger picture, Reese.
Flowers once an hour.
Let's think about connecting with a coffee in the morning, a glass of wine at night, a nice text during the day, because at least you're thinking, I've got to prioritize them.
But it's not very natural, I suppose, monogamy is what I'm getting at. I mean, 95% of the animal kingdom don't bother with it. My cat takes a different lover every night, and I'm very proud of that. You know, meanwhile, you're looking at vultures and skinks, a type of ugly lizard. They're the monogamous ones, and you'd have to be because beggars can't be choosers. But the fitter animals, John, the cheetahs, the peacocks of the world, they're out there getting as many partners as possible. Doesn't that say something about us as people, that we want to be vultures and skinks? I mean, the only creature that is said to be completely monogamous in all situations is called the Diplozoon paradoxum, and that's a type of parasitic worm. Are we the parasites, John? Are we the worms?
Well, it just shows you everyone's capable of doing it, Rhys. Even the worms, you know?
God, he's good. It's like I'm on his show.
Look, there are those out there that really advocate the idea that we're hardwired for monogamy and that we long to attach a long term to get all that security and that sense of safety from them and that intimacy as well. I think that humans have that. Certainly some of the animals that you've pointed out don't have that same urge, but I think we're different and I like that about us. It's inspiring.
Wow.
Now, some people will not be into monogamy.
But what was all of that then?
And they'll love the idea of, you know, having more numbers in their relationship, having open relationships. And, you know, I wouldn't stop them if that's what they want to do.
It's but true. Some people do want more numbers in their relationships. These people are called polyamorous. They have multiple romantic partners at once, creating a sort of sexual squad or gaggle. But how does it work? Do they pick favorites, and are there bunk beds involved? And what happens when they break up? Do they all go their separate ways, or does just one of them leave, like when Robbie left Take That, or when Jerry left the IRA? To find out more, I spoke to Leanne Yao, an online influencer and offline polyamorist. Thanks for joining us. So you actually are Leanne.
Yes, my name is Leanne.
Now, it says here that you are polyamorous, but that's just a piece of paper I've written on. So is that true?
Yes.
And what does that mean to the layman? Or woman?
Well, a polyamorous relationship is, instead of two people being in an exclusive romantic and sexual relationship, everyone in the relationship has the freedom to seek multiple partners with the consent of everyone involved.
So come on then, Lily.
It's Leanne.
Sorry, Leanne. Tell us, how many partners have you got?
I'm in a non-hierarchical polyamorous relationship. I've been with my current partner for 2 years now, and we met when I was dating someone else. And, you
Hang
know,
on, let me get a pen.
It's me and my partner, and we both have other partners, but
other partners.
They're not dating each other. Like, I'm not dating his other partner, and my other partner isn't dating them. I have a casual partner who I see around, I'd say, like, once a week. Two partners that I meet up with regularly. I have someone in Brighton who I see once every half a year, and we hang out for a weekend. And at the moment, our partners live quite close to us. You know, I don't live with all of my partners, but we do hang out pretty regularly. I mean, most recently, we went to the cinema as a group of four, like, twice this month. Yeah.
Okay, Leanne. I'm just going to...
Hey.
Now, John, I'm speaking to someone called Leanne, Leanne Yao. Now, she's in a non-hierarchical polyamorous relationship. She's got a partner she lives with and a casual partner she sees once a week. Her live-in partner also has a casual partner, but that casual partner is not one of her own partners, but they do sometimes go to the cinema as a four. She also has ambiguous, sometimes sexual relationships with friends and has someone in Brighton she sees every 6 months for a weekend. Now, John, what do you think of that as an alternative to monogamy? Do you like it?
It just sounds to me like a lot of work.
Too much hassle.
Yes, I imagine polyamory would be very exhausting.
Too much faff.
Very tricky.
A lot of hassle, is it?
Difficult to juggle. Multitasking is required. And I, for one, am really a big fan of keeping things
simple. Yeah, John, I'm just going to...
enjoy that kind of fluidity and flexibility. So, you know.
Now, Leanne, it sounds to me like a lot of work. I imagine polyamory would be very exhausting. Very tricky. Multitasking. Is this the case?
Well, you know, like, there's a saying in the polyamorous community that love and affection is infinite, but time and energy are not.
Oh, that's clever. Are there spreadsheets involved?
Yeah. I am very much a spreadsheets person. I think it just makes it easier for me to keep track of the dates that I'm going on and things like that. I share a calendar with my partner and also his other partner. I had a girlfriend who was married, and I shared a calendar with her when we were together.
My God, Leanne, it's like a full-time job. Is this why people stay monogamous? Do you think, because they can't handle all the moving parts?
Well, I mean, my kind of hot take, and, you know, I don't know if you'll agree, but I do think that a lot of people are monogamous not because they actually want one partner, but because they want their partner to only be with them. It's like, oh, well, like, I could have multiple partners, but then that would also mean giving my partner the same freedom. Well, I don't want that. So I'm going to be monogamous. But I guess, like, the institutionalization of monogamy and how it links to marriage is a relatively recent invention. Whereas before, people would get married for economic and political reasons. Now people put a lot of expectations on their partners, like, oh, like, not only are you legally and financially tied to me, but also I expect this from you emotionally and romantically and sexually, and only from you and no one else. It's putting all your eggs in one basket, frankly.
What about Netflix? Do you share Netflix with all of them? Or did just a couple of you share a Netflix account?
It's really annoying when Netflix introduced their kind of anti-password sharing stuff. That really messed things over for the polyamorous community. Because
so what you're saying is Netflix doing that was actually a bit of a hate crime in many ways.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have personal vendetta against them. I have a partner in Brighton who shares their Disney Plus account with a bunch of us, though. So I still have Disney Plus. We all spread it communally. You know, someone has Amazon Prime and shares it. Someone has Netflix and shares it.
So if nothing else, I mean, even if you're not into the other side, the romantic or the sexual side of polyamory, it just makes sense from a business perspective.
Yeah.
Martin Lewis, money-saving expert, should be advising everyone to get into polyamory. just to save money on streaming services.
You know, like, why not, right? Like,
it was a fascinating revelation. For years, politicians have pretended to try and failed to solve the issue of people being all poor. But was the solution staring us in the face this whole time? Instead of cutting back on fancy coffees and comparing ices online all day like geeks, could we solve the cost of living crisis by just encouraging couples to add a third? And is this even a new idea, or has it really been happening throughout all of history? John,
yeah.
People say monogamous marriage is very traditional, but in reality, is it not more traditional having multiple partners? Pharaohs and sultans did it. King Solomon had 700 wives, unless we forget the concubines. People say having multiple partners is very modern and hip and happening. But is it not even more traditional than monogamy?
Well, there's certainly, as you've quite rightly pointed out, Rhys, plenty of examples in history where people have had a lot on their plate, so to speak. But there's also other traditions of being in a monogamous relationship.
Yeah, but traditions come and go, don't they? So are monogamy and marriage still fit for purpose? I mean, we've got to adapt to the modern world. Have you seen what the Dutch still do at Christmas?
No.
Christ.
I know. Look, fit for purpose. I haven't thought about marriage in that way, but look, I'm still a person that would say yes. I think where it's becoming more difficult now is that technology apps have really created a relationship landscape which is very transactional. You can swipe, you can get rid of people, you can ghost, you can breadcrumb, Rhys. And I think that can contribute to people finding it harder to have those committed relationships.
What do you mean to breadcrumb? Is that to sort of leave a trail of breadcrumbs in the woods so you can escape your partner if it turns out she's a weird witch who's trying to cook you? Because that is a fairy tale, John, and you did say you wanted happily ever after.
Yeah, similar. You're sort of leaving little crumbs just to keep them interested, but not really going forward with the commitment.
Not the full loaf. Not giving them the full loaf.
Exactly.
Is it sort of to do with how the different generations are raised then? You know, the older generations were all raised on an idea of sort of resilience, whereas younger generations were raised on an idea of, you know your worth and never settle for anything less than you deserve, you know, and dump his ass and so on.
Yeah, yeah. And speak your truth, you know.
Well, exactly.
I certainly see it on Married at First Sight because although you may not be aware of this, Rhys, I'm over 50. Some of the people that I'm talking to on the show are half my age and they feel empowered and emboldened to get their voice out there and not commit if, in fact, it means, you know, they don't get what they want. Now, the challenge with that is that that can often be so extreme that the way they talk to intimate partners is very brutal and it results in relationship breakdowns, or they have this huge list of criteria that they're not going to compromise on, which means no one ever measures up and gets past the first date.
Yeah, well, maybe it just sounds brutal because you keep adding echoes and dramatic music to put loads of jeopardy on it. Have you thought of that, John?
Look,
for once. Well, what moisturiser do you use then if you're over 50?
Are you liking what you see?
Don't mind it.
Do you know what? It's one of the most important things I've learned about marriage is that you've got to let your partner influence you. And my wife, Kelly, she knows about moisturizer and she just says, put it on. And you know what? I say yes.
Well, then imagine how young you'd look if you had two wives, let alone 700. Leanne.
Way for all of us to get access to all the streaming services while only really paying for one.
Yeah. Leanne, is there a signal to show that you're polyamorous so that people know when they're out and about? I mean, I know swingers
yes.
famously use an upside down pineapple, I've been told.
Yes.
So is there a fruit you turn sideways, or can you just tell a poly person from the weird backpacks?
I think in the 90s, people communicated with like a parrot, because poly, like Polly the parrot.
But then you don't know if they're a pirate, I suppose. Although either way, Leanne, one of them's trying to get their hands on your booty.
But I think these days, I would say, like, I do a lot of my dating, like, on dating apps as opposed to in the wild. Because in the wild, most people are going to be monogamous. So, you know, you'd be,
terrific.
Yeah, like, shooting your shot and Pirates. Probably getting rejected most of the time. Whereas on dating apps, I can just put it in my profile. And if people don't like it, I never have to talk to them because they'll have swiped left.
Oh, booty. Technology has changed the way we interact, offering us a handy way to identify our sexual niches without having to wear a big badge to Sainsbury's Local. But one formerly marginalised group are now hitting the mainstream, getting involved in ancient traditions. That's right, gay marriage, or garage, or, knowing that lot, garage. While heterosexual marriage rates decline, gay marriages have increased by over 34 times since its legalisation in 2014. If these trends continue, there could come a day when gay marriage becomes the default, and we have to clarify when we go to a novelty straight wedding. But could there ever be polyamorous marriage? And how would the wedding work? I had hoped to ask Leanne Yao these questions. And so, I did. Leanne,
yeah.
Could there ever be such a thing as polyamorous marriage? And how would the wedding work?
So when I was with my girlfriend, when she got married, I was there, but, you know, I wasn't part of the ceremony or anything.
I mean, surely it'd be like a festival.
It would be.
I mean, the different families all sit on different sides of the church usually at a wedding. So
it would be.
Surely you'd need a pentagonal, well, not church, obviously, but dungeon or whatever, with multiple aisles like a supermarket. I mean, how could you accommodate all the fathers of the brides and best
like,
men?
Like, you're assuming that, like, a marriage would have to be a group marriage when, you know, someone might want to have multiple different marriages. But I mean, theoretically, a group marriage could work.
And that first dance, how would it work? Would you do it together, like a diversity on Britain's Got Talent? Or would there be about 50 other things?
I know a throuple where two of them were legally married, but at the ceremony itself, their shared partner was their maid of honour and got a dance with each of them after their first wedded dance as a couple.
And what if the parents are polyamorous too? I mean, the guest list would be enormous, wouldn't it? How would you even throw the bouquets? You need a t-shirt cannon to get it far enough. God, it would be so much fun, though, wouldn't it? I mean,
it would be incredible.
I'd like to see that. I mean, I'd sure get a kick out of seeing something like that, let me tell you.
Yes.
I must say, I think it would be fantastic. I think it would be a terrific night. I'd certainly go to one of those. I mean, it would be crippling with all the gifts I'd have to get, but...
Yeah, and not just for marriages. I mean, I had a birthday orgy last year.
A birthday orgy?
Yeah, I invited my partners and friends, and
cheers,
we had a lovely
time. John, hey. Could there ever be a polyamorous version of your show? You know, marriage at first and second and third and fourth sight, perhaps? Would that be too complicated?
No, I don't think it'll go there. Not that I've got anything against polyamory, but I think with Married at First Sight, we have our hands full just dealing with what we've got in front of our...
With the nutters you've already got on there. Have you ever had a birthday orgy?
I'm not a guy for... engaging or dipping the toe into orgies, whether they're on birthdays or any other day of the week. From this conversation, Reese, I'm really getting a distinct feeling that polyamory is front and center on your mind.
Yeah, great.
And
cheers, John. Leanne.
So that was a whole thing. That was very cool.
Could there ever be a polyamorous reality dating show? Or would that be... unwatchably insane.
I would love to see more polyamorous dating shows. Yeah, like there's so many rules like in monogamous dating shows that wouldn't really apply in a polyamorous context. And I would love to see just throw a bunch of polyamorous people together on an island and see what happens. Like,
yeah, well, you could do it on Polynesia. You offer that one, but not the booty gag. Are you taking the piss? Leanne is correct. A polyamorous reality show would be fantastic. But unfortunately, television is dead, and all the money has shifted to podcasts. Podcasts. A curious medium where people just chat to each other in between adverts for liquid dinners and online therapy. One of the most popular forms of podcast is the couples podcast. Celebrities such as Chris Ramsey, Joel Dommett, and Alistair Campbell all have podcasts with their partners. But those are all duos. I spotted a gap in the market for an octuples podcast, so I phoned the one man I knew could make it happen.
Hello?
Is that Gary Lineker? I've got an idea to pitch you that's going to blow your mind.
Right.
Now, couples podcasts are big, aren't they? Couples podcasts are huge. They talk about their problems. It's real. It's relatable. But there's just two of them. Imagine if there was eight of them. All in a relationship, all trying to get a word in to slag off the others. A polyamorous relationship podcast. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds good.
Because normally on those podcasts, it's like, hey, I'm Ian and I'm Laura. Welcome to whatever. Now, this would be more like, hi, I'm Daphne and I'm Philip and I'm Craig and I'm Jessica and I'm Sally and I'm William and I'm Craig. There's two Craigs on this. And I'm Claire and I'm Joey and welcome to The Rest is Polyamory. Pretty good.
It does sound good.
It would be like, you know, those actors round table things you see. I mean, you might have to have a sort of like a hold the conch while you talk, like Lord of the Flies, so we know whose turn it is. Mm-hmm.
I should just say,
you could do good sponsorship deals, couldn't you? Because, you know, anything in multi-packs like crisps or sort of cans of Lilt, people carrier cars, you'd hear, this episode is brought to you by the Renault Espace for when you want that romantic getaway, just the six of you. So can I count on your investment? You want to make it?
It sounds good. It does sound good. It's the sort of thing I do quite like, but I get this quite a lot. I'm not actually the Gary Lineker.
You're a different one.
Yeah.
Okay, that's 12 of you now. I'm not going to find him. Leanne, it strikes me that it's quite risky to ask for a polyamorous relationship if you're already in a monogamous one. It's a bit like that bit on a game show where you've got one prize, but you can gamble for the big prize. I don't know how you do it, really, except putting on a documentary about polyamory and dropping hints like, oh, that's interesting, isn't it, darling? Bit weird, but we could entertain the idea, couldn't we? So I guess, Leanne, one final question. Hypothetically, How would someone ask for a polyamorous relationship?
It is a risk that you take at the end of the day. You're introducing a big shift to your life, and you'd have to unpack and unlearn a lot of the things that you've likely been taught about love, relationship.
John, one final question. How would someone ask for a polyamorous relationship?
It's a very tricky one because there's so much riding on it. You know, what the partner's going to think. Why is this person bringing it up now?
I had learned a lot from John and Leanne. How romantic relationships are evolving. How they will always stay the same for some. And which moisturizer can knock years off your appearance. But most importantly, I had learned that asking to open up your relationship could cause the sort of jeopardy and drama that some make a career out of.
Bringing it up with your partner, you would need to do it in a very gentle way.
An interest in other people is very threatening.
Have an understanding of the big picture before you do it.
Does this mean that I'm not enough or that you don't love me?
Is it because they're bored?
Or like that you're going to leave me or that I'm going to be replaced?
Is this them saying we don't have a future?
Even just bringing up the idea is a grounds for ending the relationship.
Jealousy, insecurity.
Give someone else the power to hurt you.
The relationship starts to crumble. So there's a huge significance behind this question, Rhys.
There is a huge significance behind this question, Rhys. But John had taught me, just because something can challenge you and take you out of your comfort zone, it doesn't mean it isn't worthwhile doing it.
Definitely worthwhile doing.
So, John, can we roleplay this conversation? See how it might play out?
Yes. So you're the polyamorous one. You're going to ask me.
Okay. Darling, do you like buffets? Lovely, isn't it? All that choice.
Yeah, oh, no. And we've had many a great holiday where we've enjoyed a buffet. So I like variety. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting you should say that.
Yes.
What's good about a buffet is that you can mix it up. Let's say it's an all-you-can-eat. Now, wouldn't it be good if the rest of life was like that? Specifically, sexual relationships. Darling, I love you. But what I want to do is sow my oats. All over.
I'm going to be honest. I don't know where this is coming from. I mean, just the other night. What happened when the lights went off?
Well, exactly. I didn't want the lodger to see.
This is different. I mean, where's this coming from?
Inside me, there are two wolves. But wouldn't it be good if there were three?
But, Rhys, remember we said that there are certain members of the animal kingdom that do mate for life.
I don't want to be a parasitic worm anymore. And I don't think you should be either. Let's get out there.
Look, as much as it does sound tempting, you're enough for me, Rhys. You know, the intellect, the look, the tie, the hair, the you've got it all. I like commitment, I like security, I like the safety that we have in our relationship.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you like cheaper bills? We could get Netflix cheaper, Disney Plus would be cheaper, Martin Lewis recommends it.
It's all about the heart for me, Rhys, and deep down, my heart, it belongs to you, and you belong to me. I want it to stay simple, black and white, you and I, forever, together.
Oh, go on then. I had enjoyed the challenge of interviewing two people simultaneously, but in truth, I was excited to return to the safe haven of a single guest at a time, because perhaps that's who I truly am. It just left one question. Is monogamy outdated? For some, the answer is a resounding no, but for more and more, monogamy is starting to feel like yesterday's Wordle. The solution, however, may not be as obvious as adding numbers to your relationship. Perhaps it's as simple as subtracting. After all, is there anything more modern than having all the options in the world and choosing none of them? Except for on one day of the year, when you choose loads of them. Happy birthday.
Research starred Rhys James with John Aiken and Leanne Yao. It was produced by Carl Cooper and Pete Strauss, and it was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 4. And there's more of where that came from.
Do you love jokes?
She likes jokes. I'm the joke guy.
Do you find things funny?
I can tell that by looking at you.
Have you ever laughed?
I'm glad you find it this amusing.
If you said yes to any of the above, BBC Sounds has got you covered.
What are you thinking?
There's Frank Skinner's One Person Found This Helpful.
A show where we look at online reviews?
Paul Merton's Room 101.
I don't like cows.
You don't like cows?
They seem to be everywhere.
And No Such Thing as a Fish.
He just didn't want to wear socks anymore.
What a legend.
Find your next comedy favourite. Listen on BBC Sounds.